Michelle Hunt on ABC Radio Melbourne.
We were talking about the film Swinging Safari. It's just hit the cinemas, but there have been many films about swinging and people that choose to swing in their life. But it's raised a lot of questions, and there's a journalist who's based in Sydney who we're going to have a chat to in just a moment, Kerry Sackville. She went out and spoke with swingers. She was quite surprised by what she discovered and just how, in inverted commas, normal people are that do swing. So we'll have a chat with her in just a tick. But we thought it'd be wise, or to bring somebody sensible into the conversation to keep us on the straight and narrow, so to speak. Dr. Cindy Darnell, sex therapist, welcome to Afternoons.
Thank you for having me.
If we had to define what swinging is, and I guess I need to put it out there now too, that if you have a young person around you in the car or at home, this won't be an explicit conversation. It will be an adult conversation, but just a light warning for you if there are kiddies running around at the moment. But yes, if we had to define what a swinger is or what swinging is, what is it?
I think it's different things to different people, but broadly speaking, swinging is the practice of engaging in sex with multiple partners in sight of multiple partners.
And are you generally married?
Not necessarily, and this is open to people of all genders and all orientations. So it's not strictly a heterosexual practice, although it is often couched in the terms of a heterosexual practice.
It was kind of a thing that was seen to be a big part of the 1970s. I had a text come through saying, I just went and saw Swinging Safari, don't waste your money. It's not a great film, but I was hoping it might be a laugh at our times in the 70s. It was cringeworthy, but it was funny. But most of the time it was just a little cringeworthy. That's from Ruth. Is it that people that were swingers in the 70s are still swinging now, or do people start to swing at different times?
I can't say because I was a child in the 70s, so that's not really my vintage. But certainly with the communities that I work with and sort of liaise with at a professional level, they generally are people, I would say, over 25, but not necessarily young people either. I mean, I know folk in their 60s who are actively involved in what's called the lifestyle, the swinger lifestyle. So it's not just a young person's thing. I think people of all ages can participate in it if it is, in fact, their thing.
I'm curious to know if this is a part of your life, or maybe was a part of your life. 1-300-222-774. You can text 0437-774-774. You don't have to use your real name. You don't have to use any name. You don't have to tell us what. You can make up a new suburb. You can make up a new name. 1-300-222-774. And you can text 0437-774-774. What are the complications as a sex therapist? If people come to you, if clients come to you, what are the complications that rise out of something like swinging?
I think in any time we enter an intimate relationship of any kind, we open ourselves up to vulnerability. So whether we're in a monogamous relationship, a swinger relationship, and any kind of relationship, part and parcel of being intimate with another person means being vulnerable. So that's probably the number one thing that comes with being in swinger territory, is being exposed to deeper feelings, being exposed to vulnerability, being exposed to really having to navigate your own emotions and your partner's emotions in ways that demand resolution on some level. So that would probably be the main thing that doesn't only affect swingers, but really affects anybody in an intimate relationship. I always say to my clients, you know, relationships are not for the faint-hearted. So if you're not up for a robust engagement, you know, maybe relationships in general aren't for you. It comes with the territory. And I think that that's a really helpful thing for everybody to remember.
I was doing some research today. It's always interesting when you key in words like swingers in Melbourne, when you're in an open plan office situation.
As you would, yes.
And you see what pops up. But I was reading some articles and some research, and there was a misconception that swingers, well, people in couples, that it was the man that probably preferred to swing, and the wife or the partner just went along to please the man. But that's not necessarily true.
No, not necessarily true. Sometimes that's the truth. Sometimes it's a mutual thing. Sometimes it is a woman who are leading it. It's really, for it to be something that is out and open in the relationship, it is something that needs to be discussed, and it is something that needs to be you know, often sort of going back to checking in with each other about how are we feeling about this? Are we still okay with it? What are our agreements? What are the agreements that we start with? And then how, what's our process around changing those agreements later on if we notice that the original plan isn't working, that kind of thing. So for any version of an open relationship, it's really helpful to have strategies in place and more than anything, a willingness to communicate when things get a bit awkward because they're bound to, not because of the non-monogamy necessarily, but because it's the nature of relationships.
You're with Cindy Darnell, sex therapist. My name's Rochelle. You're on Afternoons. In just a moment, we'll have a chat with journalist Kerry Sackville, who's done some research. She's spent some time chatting with people that have chosen to swing as a part of their lifestyle. I guess a little bit of this came about through the launch of the film Swinging Safari with Guy Pearce and Kylie Minogue and Asha Keddie and Radha Mitchell, just to name a few. 1-300-222-774 if you'd like to join the conversation, or you can text 0437-774-774. Patrick and Ringwood sent in a text saying Louis Theroux did an amazing documentary on the lifestyle in California. It's still pretty and swinging, it was called. I actually watched that one as well, Patrick. I remember there being this scene where Louis Theroux was in the pool with a group of people that were swinging, and he turned to a woman beside him and said, "So am I swinging now?" He didn't quite realise. And it's even interesting just talking about it in the office today. Many people have said, you know what, I think maybe my parents might have dabbled in swinging a little bit. And I can even remember, I grew up in the country and I can remember we had a pool. We were lucky enough to have an outdoor pool, very circa 70s, you know, Pebble Mix, the works. And looking out late at night one night and my mum and dad having a pool party and seeing my mum topless on a lilo and thinking, right, I don't know what's going on there. I don't want to know. I can never unsee this. Yeah. I think I'm scarred forever.
This is something, it's an interesting phenomenon. My observation is that Australia or Australians have become a little more conservative in their views around sexuality over the years, because you hear a lot of stories about sexuality in the 70s being a little bit more open and so on. And these days there's a little bit more shame and fear around it, which is interesting because at the same time, we also are living in an era of unprecedented freedom. We have more sexual freedoms now than we did even last year. And there's some sort of a discomfort about it still in Australia, which is an interesting paradox. I'm not quite sure why that's happening.
Did it stop in the 80s, given that we sort of had somewhat of a sexual revolution in the 60s and the 70s, and then in the 80s we saw the AIDS epidemic come in and all of the associated information and advertising around it and the fear
that
came
certainly
in.
Would have had an impact to a degree. And what's great now is not that HIV is not an issue anymore. It still is an issue. However, the medications for HIV and many of the STIs that used to be a really big problem are now readily available at sexual health clinics across the country for very low cost or for free. And this is a fantastic thing. I want to remind people that these services are available. And one of the greatest, I think, myths about swinger communities and non-monogamy communities is that they're riddled with various infections and what have you. But infections are really only passed when we don't get tested. So if we're getting tested regularly and we're getting treatment, we completely reduce, if not eliminate, these risks. So it's really important to keep that in mind too.
A question here which I never thought I would ask on this radio station, but I'm going to ask it, and it's come in on text saying, what's the difference then between swinging and an orgy?
I don't know. I guess it would be context and your state of mind at the time.
Oh, dear. Yeah, well, look, I didn't ask the question. Asking for a friend. There we go. 1-300-222-774. You can text 0437-774-774. All of these questions were put together in an incredibly interesting article by journalist Kerry Sackville. She went out, she spent some time with people who do swing, and she was surprised to find out just how normal, that's a terrible word to use, I'm using that in inverted commas, but, you know, you can't stereotype anyone that chooses to do something a little different to you. This text saying, call me old-fashioned, but if I'm in a relationship with someone, I don't want to watch them having sex with somebody else. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. This is not for everybody. This is absolutely not for everybody. It's horses for courses. Some people are into it and some people are just not, and that's perfectly okay.
it's just coming up to 25 minutes away from 3 o'clock. You're on Afternoons. We've been talking about swinging, believe it or not, but there's lots of, there's a new film out, Swinging Safari. It's not getting the best raves, let's just say that. It's not reviewing incredibly well. I think I would see it, though, purely just for the costumes, the cars and the staging that goes alongside it, because I'm a little fan of the 70s. But we are taking your calls, 1300 222 774, and you can text 0437 774 774. Kerry Sackville is a journalist, and off the back of the film has done a little bit of research with those that choose to swing. I got this text from Roger saying, every Saturday night, 1,500 Melburnians attend swingers' parties, from my knowledge of the scene. 0437 774 774. Cindy Darnell, sex therapist, is with us as well.
Here is a moment in time in the history of the AFL.
Crossfield kick! Oh, brilliant!
ABC Grandstand.
Hi, this is Sally Pearson.
This is David Warner.
This is Bessa Brewster.
This is Elise Perry.
This is Tim Cahill.
This is Tyler Lovell from the Kookaburras.
Hey, this is Matthew Delvedova.
ABC Grandstand. On mobile, online and on your radio.
He comes in, strikes it. Oh, it's sweet!
ABC Grandstand. If it moves, we'll call it.
You're with Rochelle Hunt on ABC Radio Melbourne.
Well, this conversation was sparked, I guess, by Kerry Sackville, a journalist who, off the back of the film The Swinging Safari, went out there and had a chat with people who choose to swing. Kerry, welcome to Afternoons.
Hello, good to be here.
What surprised you about the people that you met and spent time with?
The most surprising thing was how normal they all were. I don't know exactly what I was expecting. I suppose, you know, people in gimp masks kind of whipping each other and I don't know, exuding yes. some kind of strange sexual energy. They were just really normal people who just incorporate this into very regular lives that also involve careers and children and housework.
And the people that you met, did they want to give lots of information about themselves?
Yeah, they were happy to talk to me. I used a couple of pseudonyms for the mm-hmm. article. Most of them are out to their friends as swingers, but families aren't always as supportive or understanding. And I want to say also the other thing that surprised me is how hard work this lifestyle is. They call it the lifestyle, and they play together. That's I kept saying, you know, so when you guys go and you have sex, but they refer to it as playing, so we go into a room and we play. But it's really, really hard work. It's hard finding the people to play with, and then it's really hard maintaining these relationships, and they are relationships. That was the other thing that surprised me. I sort of assumed there'd be all this casual sex and meeting people and seeing people briefly, and in fact, they build relationships, and all three of the people that I talked to had long-term friendships with other people in the swinging scene and had barbecues with them and family events and get-togethers that didn't involve sex at all.
Cindy, as a sex therapist, does that probably doesn't surprise you?
Not in the slightest. Not in the slightest, because, I mean, people who engage in sexual practices are in effect normal people, because sex is a very normal part of life. It's not an affliction or a disease. So and the fact that people happen to have group sex as a hobby doesn't preclude them from still having family barbecues together and so on and so forth, in the same way that enjoying basketball doesn't preclude you from that.
It's a little different, but you know.
Well, I think it's not, a little different as well.
No, well, what's not different is that the main focus is on having a good time, and that is a fundamental part of the human condition, and this is the same thing that motivates people to engage in all of the activities where pleasure is the central focus of whatever it is that we're doing.
And Kerry, did you find that people that were in the swinging community were swingers in the 70s, and it's just kind of something that they've held on to?
Or the people that I spoke to had all been swinging for a long time, but the people I spoke to were in their late 30s, early 40s. So I don't think they would have been swinging in the 70s. I think that probably would have been illegal. I think they'd be a bit young. And what I say to Cindy as well is what I think the difference is between swinging and basketball is that basketball doesn't take quite so much emotional energy.
Absolutely.
And quite so much briefing and debriefing.
Yes, it was
just
true.
What it seems to me, I had this idea in my head that the vast majority of their time would be spent having sex or having fun. And in fact, so much of the time is spent in discussions. So there's endless screening interviews beforehand to find people, and then discussions about boundaries and rules and what works for them and what expectations are. And then afterwards there's debriefing between the couples, and there's debriefing within the couples. So the couples are constantly managing their own feelings and jealousy and emotion. And to me, as someone who doesn't swing, I was thinking, gosh, it just feels like so much effort.
It sounds healthy though, doesn't it?
Well, this is the thing. And I mean, in many, many ways, people who are in various alternative sex communities have always led the way in terms of what has been considered unusual or weird or new behaviour within a period of time eventually becomes mainstream. Now, the mainstream narratives around sex are we need to discuss consent, we need to prioritise emotions and empathy and things like that. And these communities that have engaged in alternative sex practices for many, many years have been doing this for years. And that's not to say they're necessarily doing it flawlessly, but what has only now recently become mainstream is something that these communities have been practising for decades. And this is a really wonderful part of those communities that is often completely overlooked by, let's say, the non-swinger communities who may sit in their glass towers going, oh, well, you know, I would never do that sort of thing, which is fine, but not to make judgments when you're unsure of the processes.
As I said earlier, this is an adult conversation. We're not going to get into anything too explicit, but if you do have a young person around you, just letting you know that we are having a relatively grown-up conversation. This text saying, hi, Rochelle, as swingers, we define swinging as up to five couples. Anything over that is an orgy. There we go. I've said the word again.
Great. Useful definition. Thank you.
That's what swingers got you, but thank you. We wanted to know that earlier. Melissa's called in from Newport. Hi, Melissa.
Hi.
What did you want to say?
I actually used to be a swinger.
And what made you decide to swing?
So when I met my partner, I was actually a virgin. And we had this discussion that after a few years that it would be good for me to experience what it was like to be with other people.
So it wasn't your idea?
Oh, it was a discussion that we'd had because he had done swinging with his previous wife. It was something he'd enjoyed, so it was something I kind of questioned him about, and it just led to a discussion of us doing it.
And did you feel comfortable with that, Melissa?
Yes. It was intriguing.
And how long did you do it for?
We probably did it for about 3 years.
Right. And did you get to know, we've been talking about building up relationships, going to barbecues, the sort of the normality, so to speak, with the lifestyle that's associated with it. Was that true in your case?
Yeah, we did make some friends. Some we maintained contact with. There were some people we only saw once and it kind of just fizzled out from there. But we end up having problems towards the end, which is why we ended up stopping.
And I think this is the thing, that there's always a process with anything to do with relationships. It's which is why communication is such an integral part of this scene, because emotions do change and fluctuate, and where we might be more inclined in a different situation to just sweep it under the carpet, when we're in groups of people in this way, we kind of, it forces us to communicate more effectively.
And
that's a useful skill.
Melissa, I'm curious, while you were swinging, did you then still have just intimate sex with your partner, just the two of you?
Yes. It actually spiced up our relationship together on our own a lot more. And it gave us the confidence to venture out in exploring our own sexuality and what we liked individually in a whole new way. So we went from, I'm going to use a 50 Shades term, we went from being very vanilla.
Yes.
To now
a little spicy.
Whereas before all this, I had never owned a whip.
Okay. All right.
Very advanced.
Very advanced. Not vanilla at all. Rochelle, something that I found that was interesting that people kept saying to me was that you don't engage in swinging to improve a relationship. You need a really strong relationship first. And so what the people were all saying to me about their own relationships was that they were strong to begin with and swinging enhanced it, but you can't look to swinging or I suppose any alternative sex practices if you're having trouble in your relationship and you're hoping to heal it that way, because you really need really good communication and really good you know, boundaries and mutual understanding. So I found that interesting as
Lots of texts coming in saying, healthy? Are you kidding me? You know, this is just not what you do if you're in an emotionally mature relationship. This is just putting people into vulnerable situations and exploitation. I guess it really would depend on the individual. I mean, sometimes maybe the people that we speak mm-hmm. to are just well-adjusted in life generally, and this is not always the case.
Absolutely. Healthy is not a word that I use to describe sex ever, because it implies that there are right and wrongs. Anything outside of consent, I will draw a line there and say that that's inappropriate. But within consent, there are things that some people like and there are things that some people don't like. And it's human sexuality is incredibly diverse, even among heterosexuals. I think that's a myth that we will default to heterosexuals all being vanilla and all just liking the same old stuff. This is not true. Even within relatively straight, square heterosexual couples, there are still going to be variations on things that they enjoy and don't enjoy. So for me, as a therapist, it is not a question of healthy or unhealthy. It's about finding peace, finding equilibrium, finding balance, and finding joy in whatever it is that you're doing.
Kerry, when you were chatting to people, did most of them tell their friends and family, or did they keep it a secret?
Yeah, most of them were out to their friends and family, but there were individuals that they kept it a secret from. So, for example, one woman that I spoke to was out to the family, but not to the mother-in-law, because they knew the mother-in-law wouldn't approve. And then I spoke to I spoke to the husband of a couple who had young children, and of course they didn't feel that it was appropriate for their children to know. And I understand that. I mean, I wouldn't tell my kids about my sex life, and I'm not a swinger. I don't think it's appropriate to talk to kids in detail about any particular sex practices till they're older. So that made sense to me. But I do want to say none of them, you know, I spoke to two women in particular, neither of them sounded remotely exploited or remotely coerced or unhealthy. They actually all sounded really well adjusted and really healthy in their relationship. So I think that when people throw the whole, you know, it's not a mature thing to do, I think that's just a judgment call, because it's not what they would do.
Is this the sort of work that you normally follow up on, Kerry?
I do.
What prompted you to do this?
I do write a lot about sex and relationships. I actually have a book coming out in April about dating in midlife. I don't really go extensively into the swinging scene in the book because it's mainly based on my own experiences, and I haven't done that. But I'm really fascinated by relationships and by sex. And I had the opportunity because Swinging Safari was coming out, and I was approached by an adult dating site, not to be on the site. but with some of their statistics, and I was really surprised because over half the people who use this particular adult dating site identified as swingers, and that surprised me again, because that's not the scene that I'm in. So I assume that it's kind of very, very strange and secret and a fringe kind of element, but it's not at all. It's very common. It's just something that we don't talk about a lot.
The film isn't rating incredibly well. We're talking about Swinging Safari, but tell me, what the costumes look awesome. What was it like in terms of just having a bit of fun and looking at the cars and the housing? I would love to have been the stylist on that film.
Yeah, well, I think that the film reflects only a very small part of the swinging scene. But it's probably not my cup of tea, but it does look fun, yeah.
Kerry, thanks so much for joining us. So when your book is out, it's about dating in midlife. What are some of the main issues that you're kind of trying to tackle there?
Well, I think for women of my age, and I'm turning 50 this year, a lot of us find ourselves divorced with absolutely no experience in the dating scene as it is today. You know, when I was dating first, I was in my teens and we didn't have mobile phones, let alone apps. So everything's changed and the scene is very different. So I wanted to write something for women on how to negotiate this new world and what to look out for and the red flags and how to know whether to give someone a go and what to do when your friends are telling you, you know, to...
I can remember when my mum decided to hit the dating scene again after being divorced for a while. I think mobile phones were in, but only just. But she put a little ad in the local newspaper, and I helped her write it.
Wow.
And then you had like a number and a pin and stuff that you would then ring in and listen back. Yeah. And the two of us were sitting on the couch like a couple of giggling schoolgirls listening to all of the messages that people had replied. And
did she meet someone?
She did, actually, and they ended up having a long-term relationship.
Oh, is that wonderful?
I know, but you would sort of start to go, oh, well, he sounds like this, or I don't know about that, or you'd make all these, but it was just the way you did it then. Mm.
And now, I mean, it's great that for so many people that these dating apps are far less stigmatized than they were even 5 years ago. It seems like everybody's using them, and it's a great way to meet people.
Cindy Darnell, sex therapist, Kerry Sackville, journalist and author. Thank you so much for joining us and having a conversation that, well, I didn't think I'd be having on ABC Radio.
Certainly not at this time of the day.